Let's call this meeting of the House Judiciary Committee to order. It is now 1:49 p.m. on Wednesday, February 15, 2017. And before we begin, I would like to thank Christy Blair, the House Judiciary Secretary, and Alex from the Juno LIO, who make sure we have sound and a transcript of our committee meetings. At this time, as always, I want to remind committee members and those in the room to please silence your cell phones. Present today, we have Representative Kopp. We have Representative Kopp, Representative Eastman, my Vice Chair, Representative Fansler, and myself, Representative Clayman. Representative Ledoux is excused for the day, and we do have a quorum to conduct business. Our first order of business today is the Board of Governors of the Alaska Bar Association appointment to a public member. The Speaker has referred the Governor's appointment to the Judiciary Committee of the nomination of William Granger to the Board of Governors. Members have received the appointee's application and his resume. I believe Mr. Granger is online and wishes to testify, so we will now open public testimony. Bill, are you online?
Yeah. Good afternoon, Mr. Clayman. I am. Thank you very much for this opportunity.
Go ahead.
Well, I have been privileged to serve on the Board of Governors of the Alaska Bar Association for some time now. I think this is my fourth or maybe fifth appointment in three-year terms, so that's pushing 12 to 15 years. I think that the position is, and it's, and my reappointment is important to the Bar Association and the state and its population at large, due to having some continuity and institutional knowledge from a board management perspective. Although the management, its executive directors, and a good portion of its staff are very tenured. The rest of the board turns over one-third every year. And so after a three-year stint, in theory, you have a whole new group of people trying to interpret policies and regulations and various laws and practices that have gone on, but it also makes it difficult for any kind of long-term planning or ability to take actions that would exceed your normal term. So I'm pleased to offer myself for another appointment to do that. I still think there's lots of work to be done, and I'm happy to try and do that.
Is there anyone here on the committee? Representative Eastman has a question. Go ahead, Representative Eastman.
Yes, sir, through the chair. Wanted to ask, sir, what was your first interest in the Bar Association?
I don't know. I've always had a very keen interest in the law. My profession is a banker, as you can see by my resume. I've had long-term professional relationships with many members of the bar across the entire state, mainly in commercial types of transactions, and have always been a layman student of the law, if you will. And found it intellectually challenging to be amongst a group of thinkers that are trying to hold a process together, in the administration of justice and the education that it is undertaking for the public benefit.
Representative Eastman has follow-up. Go ahead.
Follow-up through the chair. Thank you for that. And I'm also interested, so since you have served in this position previously, for the record, can you just explain some of the responsibilities that you have if you continue on in this position?
Well, I have been in various positions, but for the most part, my position has been that of treasurer. And it's not a token rubber stamp kind of position, or at least I don't take it that way. The bar has faced many challenges over the years in how it budgets itself and how it assesses its membership for their dues, if you will, to belong to the bar, which is a mandatory bar. You know, they've gone through various budget kinds of philosophies from just running a balanced budget, spending off surpluses and lowering dues, to retaining surpluses and maintaining dues levels. And so I've been able to kind of go through the cycle a couple of times with them. And I think most importantly in the immediate times and future is running a budget. I'm very good at running a budget. And fortunately, the staff of the Bar Association is also very good and diligent about that. But in order to maintain reasonable dues to the membership and have a sense of financial responsibility for the organization, there were some things the last few years that I believe I was instrumental in seeing happen, and that would be in the area of cost reductions, mainly in the area of benefits and long-term changes to accruals. The organization previously had no limits to accruals on paid time off or sick leave. And when you're dealing with people that have been there 20, 25, 30 plus years, their accruals become huge future potential liabilities. And putting caps on those accruals, and limiting the amount of those accruals, as staffing turns over, I think, is important. I think you see that as leaders in the state in dealing with the benefits packages that those before you have established. Healthcare was an important thing. You know, they basically had a bottomless healthcare program. You know, today they have premiums they pay. They have reimbursement accounts. They have co-pays. They have higher deductibles. All of these things drove down our healthcare expenses dramatically, and that being one of the larger sections of our employment expenses was instrumental in us being able to keep our bar dues where they have. So, you know, I'm proud of the fiscal responsibility that I'm able to instill within the board.
And I would note for the record that Representative Reinbold has joined us, as has Representative Christ Tompkins. Any other questions for Mr. Granger? I don't see any questions, but, Bill, I will just note a couple of different things. And first off, I had the privilege of serving on the Board of Governors with Bill Granger for 6 years that began after he started his service and ended while he was still serving the board. There's a couple of things that I think are really noteworthy about your service. If I'm getting my history correct, you've actually now been appointed by, were first appointed by Governor Knowles, but have been continued to be reappointed by every governor since then, which now constitutes Democrats, Republicans, and Independents. And that's a reflection of your dedication to the service that is on the board. I remember a couple of things that you were instrumental in. One was that there was a sense that the board and the dues needed to be more of a pay-as-you-go system, and people often will comment that the Board of Governors is dominated by the lawyers and the public members, of which there are only three, have little or no impact on how the board does its business. But unless my memory fails me, the big force behind getting the pay-as-you-go approach to dues was really the public members, of which you were one of the lead spokesmen. And again, if I also, a couple of other areas in which the adding a pro bono coordinator to the Bar Association was another lead that was taken by the public members because they felt it was important for the bar dues to actually be supporting those very volunteer services that have been encouraged. And I think those are just two of the areas in which, Bill, I think you were instrumental. So I want to thank you for that. Thank you for your service on the board, and pleased that you are willing to continue for another term, assuming the legislature follows the governor's recommendation. Those really weren't any questions. If that brings up any comments you want to add, certainly go ahead.
No, I appreciate those kind words. Thank you. And, I certainly believe that the public members are a force to be reckoned with, if you will, on a board of governors. We may not be a majority, but I'm pleased to tell you that the board listens and is very thoughtful about taking advice from the public members, not just myself, but all of them. They bring a perspective to the board of what it's like on the street. In addition, I think the public members are very keen on public education and opportunities. The Bar Association puts a huge effort out in Martin Luther King Day for public advocacy and education and assistance to those that aren't privileged enough to be able to normally pay for their legal assistance. And those are just small things that, add up to making the bar a vibrant part of our community and paying back to the community the privilege of serving here.
Thank you. I don't see any other questions. I don't think anyone else is online, so I'm going to go ahead and close the public testimony. And is there any other questions from the committee for Mr. Granger, or any further questions or discussion from the members of the committee? I don't see any. And so, go ahead, Representative Fansler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to say thank you to Mr. Granger. Looking at his resume here, he has a very long history, it looks like, of participating in public service. And I very much appreciate his time and dedication to our state.
Thank you, sir.
And seeing no other comments or questions, Representative Fansler, do we have a motion?
The Judiciary Committee has reviewed the qualifications of the governor's appointee and recommends that the following name be forwarded to a joint session for consideration. Board of Governors of the Alaska Bar, William Granger. This does not reflect intent by any of the members to vote for or against this individual during any further sessions for the purposes of confirmation.
Thank you. And after we adjourn, make sure you stay behind to sign the necessary paperwork. And Representative Reinbold, this was the first item we've taken up today. The next thing on our order of business is House Bill 8, Enforcement of Foreign Protective Orders, sponsored by Representative Edgman. This is the third hearing on the bill. On Monday, the committee adopted a proposed committee substitute as our working document. Due to the discussion that followed and concerns from members of the committee that repealing certain subparagraphs in sections 8 and 9 could have unintended consequences, a proposal has been made to return to version A as our working document. And Representative Fansler, if you could go ahead and explain your thinking about why we should return to the original version, which is version A.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First off, I want to say that I want to thank Representative Eastman and for his committee substitute version. I appreciate his desire to make our laws as concise and understandable and plainly read as possible, and I certainly applaud that effort and certainly want to work to do that as well, and thank you for that. What I'd like to speak to, though, is that I do believe it is important to not cut the two sections that were being cut from the committee substitute. And I believe that there's two reasons for that, really. The first reason, I believe, is what could lead us down a trail of unintended consequences. By eliminating the language as it appears under the dissolution section, send a sign to attorneys or to the court system or to others that perhaps these types of protective orders no longer should be considered. Certainly an argument could be made because we went out of our way to eliminate that they no longer have a relevance in a dissolution proceeding. And I understand that, that is definitely not our intent. The second reason, I think, is because it continues to encourage the good practice of having these, once they're recognized, we want them to still be filed and put on the record, so that they're getting into APSIN and so law enforcement has them on the record, so we have them on the record in the court. So that is why I'm proposing that we go back to version A.
And I see Tim Clark is also here from Representative Edgman's office, and he may. Did you have, Mr. Clark, did you have any comments you wanted to add in terms of the return to the original version?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Tim Clark, staff to Representative Edgman. Only that the sponsor, Representative Edgman, is fully in support of the proposal to return to the original, and we have every confidence that the original carries out thoroughly the original intent of the bill.
Is there any further discussion from the committee on the proposal to return to version A? Representative Eastman?
Yes, just on that note, and in response to the very positive and helpful comments just spoken earlier, I think this is an example where we can highlight the responsibility of each of us as lawmakers to look closely at the laws that we are drafting and that we are considering pushing out of this committee to others to look at. And my encouragement to us all would be that we don't rush that job, even though we are in a very fast-paced environment, and that we thoughtfully consider each of the things that are coming before us, and we don't push them out of committee until we understand and have confidence in what they're doing and what they're saying.
Any other comments? I don't see any. May I have a motion to adopt version A of House Bill 8 as our working document?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I move that the House Judiciary Committee adopt House Bill 8, version 30-LS0127A, as our working document.
Are there any objections? Hearing and seeing none, the committee adopts version A of House Bill 8 as our working document. Now that version A is our working document, are there any further questions from the committee or comments from the committee regarding House Bill 8? Hearing and seeing none, it is our intent to move House Bill 8 out of committee today. Is there any final discussion from committee members? Representative Fansler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to put on the record that I'm very supportive of this House bill being moved along. I think we had excellent discussion on it. I appreciate all the thought that's been put into it by all the members of this committee, and believe that, once again, to reiterate that really what this is doing is bringing our statute into alignment with federal law.
And I will just make a very brief note that I really appreciate Representative Eastman bringing up the questions that he raised. Part of the reputation this committee, I think, has over history, which is really the history brought by Max Grunberg, is that we dig into details and we don't hesitate to discuss those carefully, and this continues that tradition. Hearing and seeing no other further discussions, do I have a motion?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I move House Bill 8, version 30-LS0127A from committee with individual recommendations and accompanying zero fiscal notes.
Hearing and seeing no objection, that motion carries. And again, I would note when we conclude our meeting today, stick around long enough to sign the forms. Our final order of business is House Bill 106, Civil Legal Services Fund, which is sponsored by Representative Fansler. This is the first hearing on the bill. Representative Fansler is here to present the bill, as is his staff member Mary Schlosser, who will join him and will be available for questions. Representative Fansler, if you would come to the testifying table and identify yourself for the record and begin your presentation.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. My name is Zach Fansler, the honored representative from District 38. It's my honor to sit before you today to discuss House Bill 106, and this is entitled An Act Allowing Appropriations to the Civil Legal Services Fund from Court Filing Fees. Essentially, the purpose of this bill is to safeguard Alaskans' access to the civil justice system by creating a stable and sustainable mechanism for funding the Alaska Legal Services Corporation, protecting those who cannot afford to hire an attorney on their own. It allows the legislature to appropriate up to 25% of filing fees paid to the Alaska court system during the previous fiscal year into the already existing Civil Legal Services Fund. The Alaska Legal Services Corporation, established in 1967, is a nonprofit charitable 501c3 organization whose funding comes from a variety of state, federal, and private sources. Alaska Legal Services Corporation endeavors to serve a growing number of eligible applicants. Since 1984, the number of Alaskans who qualified for legal services has more than doubled, from 41,000 to over 100,000. Yet currently, the state's contribution to the Alaska Legal Services Corporation is only a fraction of what it was 30 years ago. House Bill 106 aims to stabilize the Alaska Legal Services Corporation funding and help ensure the civil legal aid is available to all Alaskans, not just a few who can afford them. What we want to be on the record for this to say is essentially that this is a bill that we're looking to put forward that in no way obligates a legislature or any future legislatures to putting that. It really is a mechanism towards possibly funding more money towards Alaska Legal Services in the future.
Thank you. And before we proceed, I will note for the record that we have two additional individuals available for questions. Nicole Nelson, Executive Director of the Alaska Legal Services Corporation, I believe is available online. And Nancy Mead, General Counsel of the Alaska Court System, she is here. And both are available for questions, as obviously is the bill sponsor. Does any members of the committee have questions? Representative Reinbold, you look ready to go.
Still trying to formulate the question. Trying to understand, I don't believe I've talked to you about this bill, so this is kind of a first for me. But basically, I see that you have the fees, the adoption fees, about $100, change of name. Depositing a will is $50. A domestic violence protective order is free. Are these the fees that they're going to be 25% of them put?
Those are the current, through the chair, Representative Reinbold. Yes, this is currently the court fees that are set out in statute for district court, superior court, and document copying and the like.
Okay, so Mr. Chairman, I have like just a couple follow-ups. Yep. Okay, so
Representative Reinbold.
So 25%, you're up to 25% of these fees collected. You want to go into a special fund? Am I following your? intent of the bill?
Through the chair, they would go into, they could be going into a fund that would go towards Alaska Legal Services Corporation.
So basically, through the chair, it just, it seems like that one, you don't think these are affordable prices already? Or are you saying that people don't have access to justice because of these fees?
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold, these fees are what anyone who needs to file a case in a district court, for instance, pays $125 when they file that case. The purpose of this bill would be to, depending upon whatever the legislature would choose. So, for instance, if we were looking at, and this is purely hypothetical, FY18, this bill would allow the legislature to say in FY18 we are going to give up to 25%. So maybe they'll pick 5%, let's say, or to make it easier, 10%. And they say 10% of any filing fees from FY18 will now go to fund Alaska Legal Services. So that means when someone comes in and files a district court case for $125, $12.50 of that filing fee would be put towards Alaska Legal Services.
So, Mr. Chairman,
basically,
I mean, to me, it just sounds like a redistribution of wealth. I'm just at first glance. But it seems also that it's likely that the fees are going to go up for other people. Is that a fair assessment?
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold, in no way, shape, or form is it the intent of this bill to raise the fees for anyone else. This is simply saying these fees are already being paid. Right now, they're just going directly into the general fund, and that means that they can be used really for anything. What this would then do is say, because these fees are being generated in the court system, we are simply setting aside, you know, in this case, in this example, we're using 10% of the filing fee, the $12.50, which will go to funding Alaska Legal Services.
Further follow-up?
I'll come back. Mr. Chairman.
Representative Kopp.
Thank you, Mr. Fensler, for bringing this forward. most of the people represented by Alaska Legal Services Fund are victims of domestic violence, seniors, or people with at least one disability. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Kopp, yes, that is correct.
And this fund has been in existence for how many years now?
Through the chair, if I can just have 1 second.
Go ahead.
For the record, Mary Abadazuk-Schlosser, staff representative Fansler, chairman, Representative Kopp, this would be a brand new fund. There was a fund that was established in 2007 that collected punitive damages fees, and those fees are so erratic. For the past 10 years, there's been one allocation of $90,000 in 10 years. In the past 4 years, it's been $20,000 in punitive damages. There just hasn't been that many punitive damages collected in the court. So it's just not very stable. This bill that the representative has brought forth at his committee stabilizes future funding, not likely funding in lean times, but in the future when there is excess fund that we have access to.
Representative Kopp, follow-up.
Thank you. So, an unstable funding stream to represent the thousands of people that otherwise will not be represented. So, up to 25%, the legislature could take any amount they deemed appropriate. It basically is saying that up to that amount, the money that comes in from those punitive damages now, rather than just have it be... right now we're just relying on those awards, but this would say up to 25% of filing fees. Is that right in those cases? So,
through the chair, Representative Zach Kanzler, District 38. Representative Kopp, that's correct. It would be the intention of this bill to, in the future, stabilize these fees that are being used for Alaska Legal Services because of the large number of people that they do represent around the state. Obviously, the intent of this bill is in to no way, shape, or form obligate the legislature for the future to do this, but it's merely to provide a mechanism, really, for that funding that perhaps in the future, when our economic situation is in a different place, perhaps legislatures will feel secure in giving some kind of stable funding from year to year to Alaska Legal Services.
Can I ask one more, Mr. Chairman?
Follow up.
Thank you for the indulgence. So earlier we established that the clients of this are primarily seniors, primarily persons with disabilities, and primarily victims of domestic violence. That pretty much covers it. So my question is, can this legal service ever be provided to people in a criminal case, or for abortion-related litigation, or for representation of prisoners, or other controversial things that you might be able to imagine? Can you give me a comment on that?
Through the chair, Representative Kopp, thank you very much for highlighting that portion. None of those scenarios would be allowed under federal law. Alaska Legal Services cannot provide any kind of criminal cases. They cannot be involved in any abortion-related litigation. They cannot be involved in class actions, in representations of prisoners, redistricting activities, cases where a private attorney might do contingency fees, meaning, tort litigation. Those evicted from public housing due to illegal drug use, a representation of undocumented immigrants, except for human trafficking cases, that is a possibility. But really, the federal law is quite clear on what they can do. Typically, if you're looking at our statistics for the state, FY16, we're talking 2,880 cases that were helping 6,035 low-income Alaskans. A third of those represented seniors. Nearly a third of those, 32%, involved individuals with at least one disability. 25% involved domestic violence victims. Throughout the state, there are numerous offices. We particularly see all kinds of different help with veterans close to our bases, helping veterans get representation in the legal system to apply for any number of veteran rights programs and things like that. So
thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Eastman.
A few questions, if I may, Mr. Chairman.
Absolutely.
Through the chair, can you tell us what's the current amount of money that's going from the state to the corporation? And a follow-on to that will be, how many people are they turning away? And if this amount of funding was to be given to them, how much of the gap would that close, or would it close the whole gap? You may not have all those answers. I'm just very interested.
Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Eastman, thank you. Those are very relevant questions. What we're looking at right now is legal services. It's currently funded at $450,000 in the governor's budget, and that's done through a grant to named recipients in the commerce budget. Ms. Schlosser mentioned, $20,000, sometimes comes from punitive damages. That's kind of an unstable situation that we can't always rely on. I do not have in front of me right now what the percentage of cases that are turned away is, but I do know anecdotally, as a attorney who has volunteered pro bono work for Alaska Legal Services, that they strive to take every case that comes through the door. And sometimes this leaves the system a little bit stressed. They do have paid attorneys throughout, that is something that when that kind of hits its stress point is when they look for volunteer attorneys. We also can certainly speak with Ms. Nicole Nelson, and she may be able to answer that question better as to which cases are turned away and what would be needed to close that funding gap.
Follow-up?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can you, and maybe you know or not, but how does the corporation go about identifying a case that it can take versus a case that it just doesn't have the resources for? I know... currently in the language, there's the 125% of federal poverty guidelines, and so I'm curious. I unfortunately had a friend that was turned away, so I know that it does happen, and I'm curious, do they go based off of poverty guidelines, or how do you make those very tough decisions?
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, I think that may be a question better answered by Ms. Nelson. She would probably be able to speak to what their guidelines are for prioritizing cases and things like that.
Thank you.
So would you like to hear from Ms. Nelson?
I would love to hear from Ms. Nelson.
Ms. Nelson, are you on the line?
I am. Good afternoon, Chair Freeman and committee.
And thank you. And I'll just note... for the committee and the folks here, that in part of my non-legislative life, my firm volunteers for Alaska Legal Services performing case screening function, where we go and meet with folks and make recommendations or report to Alaska Legal Services about whether or not they will take the case. We don't make the decision about taking the case, but I know they rely on our review of the case about what they'll do, and I think Ms. Nelson can both comment on the screening function and, I think, answer your questions. But go ahead, Ms. Nelson.
Thank you so much. Through the chair, Representative Eastman, I understand your question to be...
Ms. Nelson, if you could identify yourself for the record and state what organizations you're with for the record here.
Absolutely. My name is Nicole Nelson, and I am the Executive Director of Alaska Legal Services.
Okay, go ahead.
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, to answer your two questions that you asked, your first question, as I understood it, was how many people in any given year do we turn away? And unfortunately, due to limited resources, in any given year, we're forced to turn away about half the people who approach us for services. And that's pretty heartbreaking.
Hold on just a second. Yeah, if you could talk a little bit slower, just because the clerk is having a hard time following. Oh, and if we're on speakerphone, it might help if you take us off speakerphone.
Okay, let me see how we do this.
We're on a polycom. We can't.
Get off speakerphone.
Any good minds thinking?
Right.
That's the mic. Okay. Is this better?
Doesn't sound great, but I know you're at the LIO, so the technology is our any problem with the technology is ours and not yours, so go ahead.
Okay, great. So, Representative Eastman, through the chair, to answer your question with respect to how many people we have to turn away in any given year, the unfortunate scenario is that we are forced to turn away about 50%, one person for everyone that comes into our office, due to lack of resources. And so that was your first question. And so the second question, which related to that, was how do we prioritize who gets assistance and who doesn't? One piece of the prioritization, as you mentioned, is doing an income screening. To make sure that the folks who qualify for our services, and also folks that aren't able to afford an attorney on their own. The next thing that we do is we prioritize cases based on the severity of the need. So we are looking, we get requests for assistance from a wide range of civil legal needs, ranging from small claims issues to questions about, you know, just smaller level issues up to victims of domestic violence or seniors who are facing foreclosure. And so we've tried to prioritize those cases where we have the most vulnerable citizens and who have civil legal needs that are impacting their health, their safety, and their livelihood. And even in that case, unfortunately, sometimes we still have to turn folks away because we don't have the resources to help. But one of the things that we do in assessing those cases are looking towards the merits of the case as well. We try to assist people only if they are they have a case going forward that would make sense for us to do that. And then also we try to leverage our additional resources or limit them by, if we aren't able to actually represent somebody in court, we look to folks and assess the situation and see whether or not they might be able to represent themselves if they're given some guidance to move through the court system unrepresented. So we must try to provide them some limited assistance or some advice that would help them move along and go along and represent themselves through the court system, or at least get some, you know, be able to represent themselves independently. You also asked the question, as I understand it, which was, how big is the justice gap and how much money would it take to cure it? There was a study done in 2012 by the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority, and it found that for every additional $100,000 that's allocated to our organization, we can serve an additional 182 people. We estimate that Alaska's justice gap at this point is, approximately 35,000 legal problems. Civil legal problems happen in any given year. Some of those problems, probably you don't need an attorney for. You just might need some assistance, and you might need some self-help education. But we think that the estimate of the one turning one family away for everyone that we are able to accept means that, again, we're able to serve about, take on about 2,880 cases per year. And so we would need to double that to fully cure the justice gap with respect to those issues that are affecting people, their livelihoods, their health, and their safety.
Follow up?
Thank you. Well, follow up on a more technical note. I'm looking at the amendment language, and it will appear to me that whether or not the amendment passes, that there's, you know, in statute a limitation on the legislature being able to appropriate funds, and that that limitation would, I think, would continue on, so that if the legislature did not appropriate the 25%, is it correct that they couldn't go and grab that money from somewhere else?
Probably not a question for. I'm sure that's not a question for Ms. Nelson. Is that a?
There's more for the bill sponsor.
Through the chair, Zach Fansler, Representative District 38, Representative Eastman. It's my understanding that legislature can at any time appropriate funds towards Alaska Legal Services. It's in their purview to do so. So.
So is the language then here non-operative when it says that the legislature may appropriate to the fund only? Because my initial reading would be that that's kind of a law saying the legislature can't appropriate a fund, which was surprising when I saw that.
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, my office is certainly willing to work with you and legislative legal to look at that language, and I appreciate you bringing this up on the record. Yesterday we spoke about this as well, and perhaps there is a proper grammar that we could put in there that might change that to say the fund from amounts deposited in the general fund of the state under, and then maybe change the and or something of that nature. Mm-hmm. But I'm perfectly willing to work with you and also work with legislative legal so we make sure we get something that reads correctly.
Thank you. Yeah, and it wasn't just necessarily any grammar as much as if our intent was to maintain a sort of a cap on what the legislature could appropriate, that would be one thing. But if the committee is not wanting to maintain a cap, then maybe an amendment would be necessary. So I just wanted to raise that. Thank you.
Any further questions? I know Representative Reinbold has some questions for Nancy Mead, General Counsel from the court system. Any questions before we bring Ms. Mead up? Any questions for the bill sponsor or his staff? I would note in connection with Representative Eastman's query, I at least read this as, to some extent, this is a statute that's somewhat aspirational because it doesn't require any expenditure, and I would imagine that if the legislature saw it in its infinite wisdom to want to appropriate $2 million to Legal Services Corporation, there would be nothing in this statute that prevented us from doing so, independent of this being somewhat aspirational and trying to come up with some, at some level, trying to come up with some figure that one might view as a reasonable amount. And having discovered the problems with the limited numbers of punitive damage awards that actually come to the state under AS09.17.020, again, I see this as at some level more aspirational than mandatory. I'm not sure if the sponsor shares my perspective on these things or not, but that was just kind of my general comment.
Through the chair, if I may. Yes, I think that we can work on something as a group. I don't think that this limits it, but if others are concerned about that, I'm certainly willing to work with them. And I just want to clarify on the record that was not an amendment. We're still addressing HB 106 as it was originally presented.
Did you have a question for the sponsor before we bring up Ms. Mead? Okay, go ahead, Representative Kopp.
Representative Fansler. So the only limitation for the amount of money available to appropriate would be simply the amount of the filing fees themselves.
Through the chair, Representative Kopp. Yes, I mean there would be a limitation in that each year the legislature could deem to give 25%, they might deem to give 5%, mm-hmm. they might deem 0%. One would think perhaps in these rougher economic times that it would probably be on the 0% area, but once things get better, hopefully we would start to try to provide that stability that you previously referred to.
Right there, I would just note, Mr. Chairman, there is a good I can't find it now, but there's a handout here that shows filing fees. There it is, for the last 7 years, and what under this bill 25% would mean for the committee. So it gives you a good idea what we're talking about. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Mead, if you could come up, and I know Representative Reinbold has questions for you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, this is Nancy Mead, General Counsel for the Alaska Court System, and I would be happy to answer any questions about HB 106 that anyone may have.
I know Representative Reinbold has questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, I'm going to speak actually to both of you, if you don't mind, but I do believe this bill is coming from a good place, a good heart, with good intentions. What I'm trying to figure out is unintended consequences, so that's my motive for my questioning. At a high level, my preference would be to have organizations such as what Mr. Chairman Klayman represents to do pro bono for these people and goodwill in the community. That is my personal preference, and not for government agencies or the legislature to reappropriate money to a corporation. That's just not my personal preference. However, I understand that this is a debatable and this is a bill that a respectable member has brought forward. So I'm going to ask a few questions. First of all, is it already true that the poor already have access to a public defender? Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold, first I need to put on the record that the court is absolutely neutral on this bill. It does not affect us fiscally at all, not one iota. We take all our filing fees and deposit them into the general fund, and then it is up to this branch to decide what happens with those fees, and that's what this affects. So it doesn't affect us fiscally, and we're neutral. That having been said, to address your question through the chair, people who are indigent are entitled to representation by the public defender in criminal cases. The legal services corporation represents people in civil actions, so there would be a difference. And in civil actions, there is no constitutional guarantee to a free, publicly provided attorney. And so my understanding is that legal services fills that gap for indigent members of the public who have civil needs in the law, in the court system.
So with that, okay, so Mr. Chairman, we were discussing domestic violence and things like that. You're saying those are civil?
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold, petitions for domestic violence protective orders are civil actions. The legal services would not provide representation to a defendant in a domestic violence criminal case. For an example, if the state charges a person with domestic violence assault on a household member and criminally, and is seeking a, you know, misdemeanor or felony conviction for something related to domestic violence, legal services would not be involved in that. That defendant would be entitled to either hire their own private attorney or, of course, get a public defender if they were indigent. But if a victim of domestic violence has needs related to a protective order, which is not criminal, wants the court to order somebody to stay away from them, is the way to put it, then that's a civil matter, and legal services could, I assume, be involved in that. But that's their domestic violence role, as I understand it.
Follow up?
Okay, thank you. This is actually very helpful. I really appreciate it. So basically, it's not only in a civil, like a protective order, but it would also help with the court fees. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Rumble, let me clarify about the court fees. And I know you were looking at our court rule on fees before. Those wouldn't change. It does nothing to court fees that people have to pay. As an aside, indigent people don't have to pay filing fees when they file a civil action, a small claims or something like that. There's an exemption if somebody is deemed indigent from filing fees. But that is just an aside. We collect, as a business entity almost, a fee every time somebody files actions, and as the sponsor was explaining, they vary depending on the type of action filed. So any non-indigent person who wants to file a small claims or a will or a civil action pays us a fee. The court in turn pools that money and hands it to the general fund. The document that Representative Kopp pointed out was the aggregate of what we collect in those funds. So for example, last year it was $2.5 million. This bill wouldn't change our fees. It wouldn't affect fees that anybody else would pay. It doesn't do anything to our filing fees. Does that clarify?
Basically, thank you. Thanks for your indulgence. So that was, you actually got to another question. Can the court waive fees? And it sounds like, yes, the court already does waive fees for indigent populations, that they don't have to pay the Administrative Rule 9. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold, that is correct. An indigent person does not have to pay a filing fee. Legal services represents people in the actual court action. So, for example, in the small claims, in the landlord-tenant, in their action, and legal services, as their attorney in that case, does not have to pay the filing fee. But, of course, that individual incurs the legal expenses unless legal services is helping them with their legal fees.
Okay. So,
follow up.
So just to wrap up, so basically this bill would take up to 25% of fees that other people paid and and give them over to the lawyer, basically, that's representing in the case. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold, the way to characterize it is, again, we just collect a couple million dollars in fees every year from everybody who pays, and indigent people don't, state agencies don't, a filing fee. So last year was $2.5 million. We put it in the general fund. We don't know or care what this body does with its general fund dollars thereafter. But this bill says that you may, if you wish, take up to a quarter of that and put it in a separate line item, a special account in the general fund. And then you can appropriate out of that special account to the Legal Services Corporation.
Right. So you basically answered the question. It would go to the lawyers, basically, the corporate lawyers. In this case, instead of being pro bono, per se, it would now go into the corporation so they would get paid for the work. Is that correct?
And through the chair, Representative Reinbold, I'm sure Ms. Nelson can explain a little bit better how legal services works, but they aren't, even though they're called a corporation, they aren't really like corporate lawyers in the way that you would think of it. They are a group of attorneys who works with other attorneys in the community who may be corporate lawyers or maybe any kind of lawyer who do some pro bono work, but their lawyers also represent people. And so, yes, what you decide you might want to appropriate from this fund or from the general fund generally would go to legal services for their operations, including legal representation to the poor.
Thank you. I would note that we have one. Any other questions for Ms. Mead? I don't see any. Thank you very much. I noticed that we have at least one person who would like to testify in the public hearing, so I'm going to go ahead and open public testimony on House Bill 106. And I see that online we have Denise Daniello, Executive Director of the Alaska Commission on Aging. Ms. Daniello, are you on the line? Ah, no, you're not on the line. You're live.
Yes.
If you'll go ahead and introduce, state your name and tell us your affiliation, and go ahead, and if you could limit your testimony to 2 minutes.
Surely. So for the record, my name is Denise Daniello, Executive Director for the Alaska Commission on Aging. And the Commission on Aging is a governor-appointed board within the Department of Health and Social Services that plans services for seniors. We educate Alaskans about senior issues, and we provide recommendations regarding budget and policy items directly to the legislature and to the governor. The senior population is approximately 126,000 people, age 60 years and older. So I'm going to be very brief. The commission wishes to thank you for hearing this bill. We support it. Alaska Legal Services is an important resource for seniors. We have heard extensively from seniors during public comment at our board meetings and other community forums that they appreciate the help from Alaska Legal Services in providing them to establish Miller Trusts, wills, powers of attorney, and helping them settle landlord-tenant disputes, resolving health care issues for Medicare and Medicaid. They really appreciate Alaska Legal Services supports, and they recently have been going into the communities to talk about the changes to the power of attorney statute. Those changes were made last session, if you recall, through House Bill number 8, and people really appreciate that information so that they can understand why those changes were made, what the changes are to the form, and why it's in their best interests. So with that, I just want to thank you for hearing this bill and appreciate your support.
Thank you, Ms. Daniello. Are there any questions? Don't leave yet. You may get questions. You may not. I don't see any questions, so thank you very much. I don't see anyone else on the list. Is there anyone else in the room or online that would like to provide testimony at the public hearing? I'm going to go ahead then. I don't see or hear anyone else. I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing. I will note, however, that we're not going to move this bill out today. And we think we may bring it back on Monday. If we do, if someone wants to testify, I will be happy to reopen the public hearing to hear from folks. Any questions, comments, discussion from the committee at this point? Representative Reinbold.
Could I have Ms. Mead up again?
Sure.
Ms. Mead, if you could come back. Thought you were getting comfortable, but not yet.
For the record, this is Nancy Mead, General Counsel for the Court System.
Thank you. I think you answered this question, but I want to make absolutely sure that it's on record. First of all, thank you for being here. I appreciate it. I did read the fiscal note, and I read all the comments, you know, from so I already was very, very familiar with that. But I just want to ask a simple question. Do you anticipate any increase of fees for anybody else because of this? I think you answered the question, but I just want to make sure that this isn't going to have an unintended consequence on anybody else. Do you anticipate any increase of fees in any way?
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold, this bill will have absolutely no effect on how the court sets its filing fees.
Thank you.
Representative Kopp.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, thank you. Under the comment section, which you alluded to, I have some comments.
We're happy to have both questions and comments.
Great.
I think Ms. Mead's off the hot seat at least.
Okay. I really appreciate Representative Fansler bringing this bill forward, and I don't think we can underscore enough that Alaska Legal Services is a nonprofit, a 501c3. It's one of the geniuses of our American system is the nonprofit, and most of the time they do things that government is ill-suited to do, generally better. And this is a very low-cost legal service vehicle to get legal services to people who need it the most. I've seen it work in my professional life over many years. And as far as the fund situation, how the money is set aside, we have many examples in the law now. The Alaska Police Standards Council training surcharge, every time we get a speeding ticket or every time there's an arrest, or they always have their $50 training surcharge, it's appropriated as a special fund within the general fund, which the legislature may appropriate that amount or less. And this is no different. It's setting up a fund. It's not. I agree with your comments, Mr. Chairman, that it's aspirational, where it's not directive. It simply establishes a vehicle for this funding mechanism to occur up to 25%. And this is probably one of those bills where we can tangibly show that we care about people who are vulnerable in really tough circumstances. And so thank you, Representative Fansler. I am a co-sponsor, and I appreciate you bringing it forward.
Any other comments or questions from the committee at this time? I don't see any, so we are going to hold the bill, although my inclination based on the discussion is that we'll plan to move this bill on Monday. We are not going to meet on Friday, so if you have proposed amendments to this bill, please get them to my office by 5 o'clock on Friday. And unless there's any other discussion from the committee, then we will go ahead and adjourn for the day. Please be sure to stay after the meeting to sign two committee reports. One is to Mr. Granger, and one as to House Bill 8. And a reminder again to committee members that we will not be meeting this Friday, February 17th, and we will stand adjourned at 2:52 p.m.